IndieCan Music presents the Toronto Indie Scene with your hosts, Joe Chisholm and Andre Skinner, bringing you an hour of Toronto's best new music and a look behind the scenes with industry insiders and artists.
Diane Foy, publicist and president of Skylar Entertainment, is our guest today. But first, live from IndieCan Studios, we have Uncle Seth. With us in our studio, the very misbehaving Uncle Seth.
Misbehaving?
Unbelievable. I can't believe you guys are still here. All right, that was Uncle Seth with To Be an Angel. Why don't you guys tell us a bit about the writing of that song and how it came about?
Huh. Well, actually, it's funny because that one was a song that Jeff and Tara and I were doing a little sort of writing session and going back and forth with bits of songs. And I think that was just like, I think we were getting ready to leave, and Jeff just played this guitar riff, and we're sort of like, hey man, what's that? And Jeff played this little riff and a couple chords. Tara started singing this melody, and I said, hey, what are you singing? And I listened to what you're singing, and I said, give me a second. And I pulled off this thing that I'd had on the computer from a song I'd written like years ago that I'd kind of discarded, but the melody reminded me of that, and it was the lyrics to this song, To Be an Angel, which was a ballad when I wrote it originally. And I gave it to Tara, and then like within about half an hour, we'd rewritten the lyrics.
We had taken the lyrics apart and repieced them together and got this amazing song.
Yeah, and it came, I think probably as a band composition, that came together faster than just about anything we've done. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's other tunes that we've individually brought into the band, and there's tunes that we've written as a band that took, you know, time and a few jams, and mm-hmm. you know, people took it away and came back with it. But that one came together almost complete within about an hour, half an hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah. It had that great sort of mad rush where it felt like we were, oh, there's a thing. Let's, you know, like that, mm-hmm. you know, on this crazy Easter egg hunt or something for this idea that's like just out of reach. Yeah.
Well, as soon as I saw the lyrics, like just the whole idea of it struck me as so honest and refreshing of just the whole idea of what does it take to be an angel?
Yeah.
Where does the sun go when it sleeps? Was just so like childlike and just mm-hmm. going through the... The process of growing up was how it really struck me, and
the images actually were I was thinking about I had been talking to somebody about like religion and faith and all this stuff, and I was just kind of thinking about all of the different kinds of faith that you have, and as you know, going from being a little kid and getting, you know, that little Red Gideon Bible and that sort of stuff, to like being an adult and trying to kind of come to terms with all these different, you know, different, and there's some really subtle religious imagery, and there's really some stuff about, you know, belief in other people and belief in, you know, if there's a God or another kind of great being in the world. And it's just sort of like all this stuff. And yeah, I think the childlikeness from it comes from just sort of the, you know, the reflecting on the kind of vastness of the world and, you know, in that sort of phrase, what does it take to be an angel?
Let's hear some more music from Uncle Seth. This song is One More Year.
Listen, it's out there. So much skin to show.
Where'd the name come from, Uncle Seth?
The name Uncle Seth comes from, I was listening to The Grateful Dead one day, Sometimes I Want to Do, and I was driving across a bridge that went over the 401, and I almost ended up traveling onto the 401 by accident as a truck cut me off. And on that truck said, Uncle Seth Plumbing and Accessories, and I decided right there that was going to be the name of my next band.
There you go.
And that's the, and that's kind of the...
Mysteriously, I've actually done some research, and I've never been able to find tell of Uncle Seth's Plumbing and Accessories anywhere in the Toronto area.
But anyone who's been on a road trip with Jeff knows that things happen that don't really happen. Where he could be driving home at like 3 a.m. and trying not to fall asleep and cranking up stand-up comedy in his car so he doesn't drive off the road. So it could have said, like, eat at Moe's.
Some other characteristics of Grateful Dead fans as well that could conjure up... a truck with a name like
I suppose, but
Jeff's not really.
No, he's more, probably more like,
I'm the squarest Grateful Dead fan
really is.
Ever. And that's a band with a following that is not known for being stereotypically cool.
Yeah, really hip.
You know, and I'm pretty square as a Dead fan goes, I have to admit.
Well, who came up with the name Lame Suburban Poetry for your first CD that came out in 2002? I love that title.
I think that was one, we all came up with lists of names that we liked, and it was actually a lyric in one of our songs.
Yep.
And I think I came up with it because I had a crazy idea for the album cover.
That's right.
And I thought Lame Suburban Poetry fitted, went well with it because I had a picture of a basset hound sitting on a stool, kind of with a beret on, kind of looking like he was like at an open stage. Because I just thought it was like just absurd.
And that ended up being the cover.
And overly arty. Yep. And Lame Suburban Poetry kind of fit with it because it...
And our friend Mike did a painting of that, and I actually have that painting in my basement, which is very cool. So that cover that you see on the album is actually an oil painting that I have in my basement, which is really kind of cool.
You also got... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say we all share the painting. Sometimes it's sort of custody. Like the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Right. You know, for a while it's in Jay's place.
Also, if someone does well at a gig, you get to keep it for a little while.
Yeah,
Jeff had it in his car for a while.
I've never slept with the painting, so.
Well, and that, because if you did, you'd foul it and we wouldn't be able to take it with us.
It's also a hard album to find because sometimes I stumble over my words. Instead of saying lame suburban poetry, it comes across like me saying lame Serbian poetry, which I don't mean.
And
I apologize to my mother for even saying.
And that leads to a lot of misfiling in record stores and libraries.
Yeah.
Not to mention death threats and...
From myself.
Because we'll be touring in Serbia anytime soon.
Well, we used to do well in Kosovo, but it's, you know...
Your cousins on Tara's cousins on her mother's side all hate us.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, is that available on iTunes, that CD?
All of our stuff is currently available on iTunes. And, everything that we've recorded, the Lame Suburban Poetry CD from 2002, the EP... Forgive and Forget Volume 1, all the songs from that, and our single that just came out, which is a cover of Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now, and all that stuff's on iTunes, which is pretty cool because we've sold stuff. I was just looking at the stats actually the other day, and we've sold stuff as far away as the UK and Japan. We sold, I think we sold 6 units.
You sold stuff in Japan?
We have absolutely sold stuff through the iTunes Japan store and iTunes Europe, which could be anywhere in Europe.
Now, how did you guys get hooked up with iTunes?
Well, it's through CD Baby, so our distribution is through CD Baby, and it's actually really cool. CD Baby, for those who don't know, is a digital distribution for musicians, and you send your CD to these guys, Derek Silvers in the States, and they hook you up. They're in Portland, I believe, actually, and they for a few extra bucks will put your stuff out to digital, and they'll send it out to all these. So it's really not just iTunes; it's actually on a lot of other. Digital systems. I was looking
Rhapsody,
it up. It's on Rhapsody. It's on some of the stuff's on Rhapsody. I looked it up the other day. It's in Yahoo Music now, which is becoming a bit more popular, and it's in a bunch of other systems as well.
We like to mention iTunes though, because we're tight with Bill Gates.
That's right. He's the other guy.
It has nothing to do with iTunes.
He was actually the fifth member of Uncle Seth.
No, but I got nothing.
After we broke up and several members die, he's going to actually tour. And just like Pete Best does with the Beatles, and just be the Bill Gates tour.
Sort of. Like, he's going to create computer versions of us.
Yeah.
Holograms.
That's in the works. That's the next thing.
I wish he'd heard.
Like the gorillas.
Yeah.
You guys will tour on screen instead of live.
Man, I can't believe.
Or as holograms, like they did at the Grammys. Did you guys see the Grammys?
Did somebody...
And the gorillas were actual holograms, and they looked like live cartoons. It was unbelievable.
Oh, I totally missed that.
It was cool.
I wish I watched the Grammys, which you'll almost never hear me say.
So in 10 years from now, you guys, or maybe 30 years from now, you guys will be holograms. That'll be cool. Uncle Seth.
Yeah.
Holograms in the studio.
No, it'll make me giggle, because I'm a child of the 80s, so it'll just make me think of Jem, which probably means nothing
to
you guys.
Oh my gosh, yeah, of course.
But Jem came out at the same time as Strawberry Shortcake. All the girls were freaking out.
Oh yeah, I'm a big Strawberry Shortcake fan from way back. Represent.
tell us about this song, Video Blue. Who came up with the idea for the song, and how did it develop?
Well, it's a cover of a song by our friend Matthew Osborne, who passed away a couple of years ago. And I guess the story from our perspective is that it's a song. We were doing a tribute concert for Matt at the Silver Dollar Room a couple of years ago, and we were looking for songs to cover. And that was a song that I had been lucky enough to play with Matt a bunch of times. And Matt was best known probably as a great singer-songwriter, guitar player, and just stellar at all those things, but also a really good harmonica player. And we actually... when he recorded that tune, it was just him singing and playing harp, which was really a cool vibe. And I sat in with him a few times, and we traded off harps. So we had this little sort of thing where we'd get up and kind of pose and show off and trade harp licks back and forth. And so when he passed and we wanted to do a song, I felt that was a good tribute.
Can I just say that if anyone who's hearing this has not listened to Matt's music, they should absolutely find it as soon as possible. Incredible stuff.
Is there a website that you
it's can actually plug? On I was the hosting his stuff on my server, which is musicface.com. So Uncle Seth's main site is musicface.com/UncleSeth. His is musicface.com/Matt, or you can also go to mattosborne.com.
Mm-hmm. All right,
awesome.
A little bit of history behind your harp playing. You're a fantastic player. Tell us about that. How long have you been playing?
My father played, and he played straight harp, like not really blues style, but he taught me to play harp when I was about 7 or 8, and I just kept it around mostly to annoy people. I wasn't really very good until I got into my teens, and the first time I played blues, actually, or I played a bluesy part, was with Andrew and Jim Cregan, who later went on to be famous in that they were members of the Bare Naked Ladies. And they had a blues band when we were in high school, and I went to high school with them. And they asked me to play a tune with them on stage. I didn't really play blues. So I kind of had to learn to play the blues to play with them on stage. So I learned enough blues licks to sound decent in this little blues band that they had. And that was my first experience playing on stage, and I hadn't looked back.
I think the most interesting story I ever heard about Jay's harmonica playing was when he was in high school, and they'd be all out going to the movies or going out on trips or stuff. And in order to get home, we lived in the east end of Scarborough, he'd be downtown, just take his hat off, throw it on the ground, play harmonica until he had bus fare to get home.
Right, you only did that once, but yeah, it did work.
This is Diane Foy from Skylar Entertainment, and you're listening to the Toronto Indie Scene.
She felt as bad as me, but she's taking it quite heavily. 'Cause my woman is cheating and treating me low, and I got it all on video. My woman is cheating and treating me low. Tried them on, so I knew something was going wrong. So I had to make my evidence clearer. Got myself a two-way mirror with my trusty beta KL. Some bailings by the dresser stand. Cheating and treating me low, and I got it all on video. My woman is cheating and treating me low, and I first play. I see my baby and her man, look at them go. And I got the full color video. Cause my woman is cheating and dreaming low, and I'm thinking of selling this here video. We need my celluloid, Mr. Rob Lowe.
We want to hear from you. Please contact us at IndieCan.com with your comments, suggestions, and requests.
Just heard Barzin from My Life in Rooms. That song, the whole album, is like a warm blanket for the soul. What did you think of it?
I thought the entire CD was amazing. I had a listen on my headphones a couple of weeks ago while I was just relaxing, and it went by like nothing. I had to listen to it a couple of more times because all the songs fit in together really perfectly. Great stuff.
I think it's as essential a part of a Canadian CD collection as Jagged Little Pill would be. Check it out at We Work Records, which is weewerk.com.
Before that, we heard Elliot Brood with the tune O Alberta off of the Tin Type EP, 2004. Elliot Brood is a really, really great artist. He's currently also signed to Six Shooter Records and has a great career happening right now. He's touring in Europe, he's touring in Canada, touring in the States. He just recently did South by Southwest, and he also won the Best Up-and-Coming Canadian Artist for the Indie Awards at Canadian Music Week. So look out for Elliot Brood at elliotbrood.ca.
Let's talk about the Luminals. Here's an opportunity for you to do something special for a Canadian indie band. Bon Jovi has selected six indie bands, one of which is going to play before a stadium audience in New York City to open his show. If you go to the Bon Jovi site, please listen to all of the artists there, but you get to vote. Fans are going to decide. We're going to play a tune from the Luminals. The tune is called I Don't Want to Be a Robot.
Yeah.
That's Tacoma Red with Please Keep Believing. We'll be talking about them a little bit more in a while. We have with us in the studio Diane Foy, president of Skylar Entertainment. Diane, please tell us and your listeners a little bit about what you do.
Well, my main gig is as a publicist. So I manage Tacoma Red and then all the other bands that I work with, I'm doing publicity. So say a band has a CD release coming out, I would maybe start 6 to 8 weeks before the CD comes out and start sending it out to press outlets across Canada. So if I do national CD release campaign, so I would send it to all the dailies, weeklies, monthlies, campus, online, and just follow up, trying to solicit, trying to get some reviews, some interviews, profiles. If the band's on tour, that helps, and I'll contact press in each city, trying to get press around the tour date.
I see a lot of young bands plan their CD release party and the CD hasn't even been pressed yet.
Yes, and they drive me crazy.
Ideally, if a new band wants to work with you, at what point is the best time for them to engage you as a publicist?
They need to not be in so much of a hurry, because so many indie bands, they spend all this money on recording, they, you know, work so hard to get the CD, and then they quickly, once it's done, they manufacture it and release it. And then they think about all the marketing and everything else afterwards.
And because they've realized that a lot of things haven't fallen into place, and it's been quite a waste of money.
Yeah, and they set up a CD release party. And a lot of times, I've heard of so many bands that they set up a CD release party, and then they end up having it without a CD because things got backed up, they didn't plan, they didn't have it manufactured yet, and so many things go wrong. It's like, wait until it's done. Completely done, then set a release date, then do your planning of the marketing plan and getting radio promotion, publicity involved, touring.
Just a quick question, sorry. How much is your service for an indie band, for example?
It really ranges. It could be $1,000 a month is probably the mid-range, depending on how much the band has going on. It could be less, it could be more.
Right.
You know, I try and work with indie bands, and I can come up with smaller campaigns to suit their budget. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be the full national CD release campaign, but some bands don't even need that. If they're not going to tour, then it's not really a lot of point in, selling the Vancouver press if they're only going to ever play Toronto. Mm-hmm. So we could also do more of a regional campaign, and that would be a lot less, a little bit more affordable. Or, you know, if... It really depends on what the band has going on. If they have everything in place and they're serious about it and they're going to make this their career and they want to do whatever they could possibly do to make this CD happen, then they should be trying to tour across Canada and they should be doing a national campaign. But so many bands just can't. They have day jobs, they can't tour, they, you know, are happy just playing in the regional area. Then we can do a more regional campaign.
So there must be a process you go through to actually choose the people you work with.
If there's a band that I really want to work with, then I'll say, I really want to work with you. Let's try and work it out. If it's out of your budget, we'll work something out, you know. It's because you want someone that's going to be passionate about it when they're selling you to press. But on the other hand, when you're saying there are so many people out there are promising them the world, that's when you don't. That's who you don't want to hire, because there's no guarantees. And if they're offering you guarantees of, or they're telling you that you're going to be on the cover of every magazine in Canada, it's not going to happen. So
exactly.
There's no guarantees at all.
So what's hard about your job? What's the most difficult thing in getting people to notice your bands?
It's a little bit two different things. A lot of times it is bands, they just don't have enough going on. They're not working hard enough. A lot of times they think if they hire a publicist or hire a radio promoter, that's all they ought to do. Or just because they have a CD out, there you go, write about me. And you need to have so many things in place. You need a good story. You need to give people a reason to want to read about you and to want to write about you. And just because you have a CD, it's not enough.
I think a lot of young, naive bands feel entitled. Well, it's good music. People will buy it, won't they?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you must have to work with their expectations a little bit.
Yeah, I try to make them kind of realize the reality of it and kind of tell them that this press editor has a desk full of CDs, and they're getting tons of indie bands that are all great. Like, you could be, you, I know you're great, but there's so many other great bands as well on their desk, and you have to have everything you could possibly have going on and to more. Get their attention and more.
And like you said about a good story, I mean, when you look at Now Magazine or I Magazine, for example, and there's a feature story, I mean, everybody wants a feature story, but usually there's something about that story that's like more interesting than just the music.
Yeah.
It's how they got together. It's the band members' backgrounds. It's, you know, it has to be really interesting. It has to grab the audience. It has to grab the guy who's writing it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so important, you know, such a big important part for a band to succeed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a lot of times it's not even the music. It's they have such an interesting story that people want to read this story. Even if they never hear the music, it has to be an interesting story.
Yeah. The Killer Elite, their music wasn't that great, but their story was like, it was like a movie when you read about it. They made the cover of the Now Magazine a few years back, and it's like, the story was, you know, every time they played a bar, you know, a brawl would ensue. And when I read that, I'm like, that's got to be the most kick-ass band in the world. I don't care how they play.
You want to read that story.
And it's great. It's a great story, you know what I mean? And they'd pay their dues in other bands and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't even want to hear the music. I'm like, that story just sells itself.
Yeah.
That used to be what we looked for as a night out when I lived in Calgary. So you must have to call a lot of favors and work with a team. Who are the other players that you're going to work with when you're promoting a band, and how do they fit into the overall picture?
Well, it really helps to have like everything in place. So if you have a publicist, it would be great to have a radio promoter. If you want to be on the radio, you know, get someone to promote your song to the radio station that knows them. Especially with radio promotion, it's hard to get those people on the phone. So you kind of need to hire someone to do it for you, because they're not going to take your call. So you need to hire someone to do radio promotion. If you can get an agent, it's really hard to get, but that helps. Or do it yourself and get aggressive and be able to book your own shows, because touring definitely helps. Like when I'm doing publicity, if you're touring, that helps so much to get press in each city. Because even if it's a brand new CD release, again, if I'm even if it's just a review, they still want a show to be happening when they run that review.
Yeah, it's a news peg
that
they can attach the review to.
Yeah, because I get a lot of bands going, well, can't they just do a review? And it's like, well, again, there's a million other bands. If you're playing in their city, that's more incentive for them to do a review on your record over...
So why... the music business, what drew you to this industry and why do you stay? Because it sounds like it's a lot of hard work for you.
You gotta love it, you know? It's passionate about music. Everything I've ever done, it's always been music related because I just always wanted to be around music. So I was a photographer. I always wanted to shoot bands. And, you know, big part of my life, I was a makeup artist. I always did photo shoots and videos. So I always wanted to be around the music and did it. So finally I just jumped in and I love it. And
were you ever a performer?
No.
Just on the outside?
No musical talent at all. That's right. Why I'm on the other side.
I thought we'd do a makeover on air, but I figured for a radio show it just wouldn't
have. No, it wouldn't really work that great.
I still do makeup as well sometimes.
Yeah, if we do on air, you're our go-to person. Tell us about Tacoma Red. You manage them as well as being their publicist. How did that relationship come to be?
I kept going to their shows, and it comes back to, again, passionate about the music and why we do it. They reminded me why I do it, you know? Every so often a band comes around that you're like, oh, that's why I got into this industry, because you get so excited about them, and you want to see them do well, and you want to do whatever you can to help them out. So I kept seeing them, and I got their first demo and just loved it, and just started talking to them. You know, I didn't jump in to manage right away. I was just kind of, well, you know, because you got to kind of see how you work together as well. So I was kind of helping them out, got them new photos, wrote a new bio, redid the website, and all the kind of image stuff, getting their image together and kind of helping them out. And then
from the beginning stages till now, how much have they progressed with your management?
I think it's a whole other band. But, you know, it's also the other people I got involved. Mm-hmm. You know, Mo Berg coming in to produce the record.
Yeah.
Even just from working with Mo, they're a completely different band. Mm-hmm. You know, they learned so much probably in the last year. They're a whole other band.
Yeah, I was talking to them about that, and they just, they were talking about how, you know, they really learned Mo Berg, the producer, and wow, he's cool, he gets us, and, mm-hmm. and look what he's done for us, right? And then the whole reunion thing happened, and they saw him on the stage, and oh my God, he's that person too, and
yeah.
That was a big revelation for them. So what's coming up with Tacoma Red? What can we expect?
Well, we just finished mastering, so that's, you're probably the first person I've given the new mastered version to. I just got it last night. So, new mastered version. We'll probably release it. We're kind of aiming for June right now, but, you know, I'm making them do it right. So, we'll definitely still have to have that meeting and figure out how we're going to do the marketing of it, when's a good time to release, have a release party, and do the publicity and radio promotion around that. So, we're thinking around June. But,
so,
you know,
if things could happen the way you wanted them to, what would you do? Would you get them hooked up, opening for a bigger act, and send them on a North American tour? Or
that would be wonderful, but very hard to get.
Hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand it's not, you know, how much they pay for opening acts. It's how much the opening acts pay to be the opening act.
A lot of times, yeah. It's, you know, the agents are not interested until you're already touring and selling out places. Same with label deals. They're not interested until you're already out selling records. That's why we're just going to jump in and do it on our own and work our asses off and try and get it done. And then hopefully we'll get the label interest and the agents interested. And, you know, I try and get them on opening slots with bands that I know and people that I know to get them on. And they work hard to try and do their own booking. And little by little, they're kind of branching out around Ontario. And we'll hopefully get them over to Quebec and Winnipeg and, you know, we're hoping.
So there's another band you brought to our attention by the name of Sonic City. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sonic City, they're out of Vancouver. 12-year-old guitar genius, his name is Danny Simonson. And Rod Byrne, who's well-known in the Vancouver area, is the singer for the band. Mm-hmm. And the album is coming out next month. They will be at the Horseshoe, actually, April 25th. We're going to do the big CD release party for Toronto there.
We'll have to head out and check that one out for
That'll
sure.
That'll be wicked. It'll be Tuesday New Music Night.
And that's when we'll throw in the towel and say, if this kid's that good at 12, what are we doing?
Yes. Yeah, he's already played with Les Paul, and he has so amazing. Much going on.
Cool.
That, and they, I think Stay With Me has already been on commercial radio.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing really well in Winnipeg for radio.
This is their first CD?
Yeah. Actually, they had an independent release before this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple of reviews in the back of that package for the other album.
Well, but we'll check it out. And
this is the official debut.
As a matter of fact, let's not leave our listeners in suspense any longer. Pick a song for them.
Play Stay With Me. That'll be cool.
All right. This is Sonic City with Stay With Me.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit indiecan.com.